Atheists like Dawkins want to keep the product of Christianity while getting rid of Christ. Doesn't work that way. Some philosophies, some religions, some worldviews are like gasoline on the fire of our darker impulses. Islam, I would maintain, and I think that this is what Dawkins himself is trying to carefully say, Islam is a fire that has been fed by gasoline. If Christianity goes, the whole culture goes. You cannot keep just a bit of it. And that is because once Christianity goes, it's not just simply that we lose the beautiful architecture or beautiful hymns or Christmas carols, but we will lose much more. We will revert to barbarism. And that's the direction that we're going with the things that are happening to children in our society, with the annihilation of the unborn. We are becoming a barbarous people. Richard Dawkins, professional atheist, biologist, and professor for the public understanding of science, emeritus at New College, Oxford University, made news this week. And he did in this interview. Now, let's listen carefully to what he had to say here.
Well, I must say, I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches. So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we, certainly if we substituted any alternative religion, that would be truly dreadful.
Well, which brings me to my supplementary point, which is that, as we know, church attendance is plummeting. But the erection of mosques across Europe, I think 6,000 are under construction, and there are many more, I mean, are being planned. So do you regard that as a problem? Do you think that matters?
Yes, I do, really. I mean, I choose my words carefully. I mean, if I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I choose Christianity every single time. I mean, it seems to me to be a fundamentally decent religion, in a way that I think Islam is not.
I think you're going to have to explain why you say that, Professor Dawkins. Why is Islam fundamentally not decent like Christianity?
Yes, I mean, the way women are treated. I mean, Christianity is not great about that. It's had its problems with female vicars and female bishops and things. But there's an active hostility to women, which is promoted, I think, by the holy books of Islam. I'm not talking about individual Muslims, who, of course, are quite different. But the doctrines of Islam, the Hadith and the Quran, is fundamentally hostile to women, hostile to gays. I find that I like to live in a culturally Christian country, although I do not believe a single word of the Christian faith.
So there you have it. Richard Dawkins in an interview defining himself as a cultural Christian, but then he goes on to say that he doesn't believe a word of the Christian faith, which actually isn't true. There would be aspects of the Christian faith with which he does agree, which is why he says he would choose a Christianity over Islam every time. But this is getting a lot of play on social media, as though Richard Dawkins is, you know, slowly moving towards conversion or something to that effect. And hence the reason I want to stress that he at the end here says he doesn't believe a word of the Christian faith, meaning he doesn't accept the resurrection. Richard, I think, would accept the historicity of Jesus Christ, but not the idea that he was the Son of God, that he was God made man, that he arose from the dead on the third day. Those are not premises with which he agrees. But he does say that he is a cultural Christian. There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to an all-time high right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. I mean, since January 21, cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to wonder when this house of cards will come crashing down. And a presidential election this year that will have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that is why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text IDEAS to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold to do the same for you. Just text IDEAS to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today. Now, I know Richard Dawkins personally. I have engaged with him on and off for, gosh, how long would it be now? I guess maybe 15 plus years. And there has been some very interesting interactions between us. It's been my privilege to moderate a couple of his debates. I think too, maybe more, and we have had some very lively correspondence and conversation. He's been kind enough to host me in his home. So what I have to say here, at least in part, is maybe a defense of Richard Dawkins, while at the same time exposing why I think these comments make no sense at all. Not really. Let's first, though, I just well, just for the sake of having a little bit of fun, let's go to just a little clip from our past when we were first meeting each other. In fact, this was the very first day that we met each other, and I am introducing him and Professor John Lennox to a packed out audience in Birmingham, Alabama, who was there for the God Delusion debate, which was their first debate. And I believe we had an NPR audience. We had a global audience who was listening to this particular debate. You might enjoy this little exchange.
Good evening. I'm Larry Taunton, Executive Director of Fixed Point Foundation, the sponsor of this event. We welcome you to the University of Alabama at Birmingham, Alice Stevens Center, and we also welcome those who are listening around the world. Tonight's debate features two of the great minds currently writing and speaking on this issue, Professor Richard Dawkins and Dr. John Lennox. I will not waste time now giving you their biographies, as you will find them in your program, but it has been my pleasure to get to know both of these men. We have brought you here this evening under rather false pretenses. There's actually not a debate this evening. Richard Dawkins wanted to come to the Bible Belt to announce his conversion. to the Christian faith. Perhaps I'm mistaken. Incidentally, Richard is representing the atheistic position in this debate, if you didn't know that, and Dr. John Lennox, the Christian one.
So there you have it, my introduction of Richard Dawkins. And again, I was just having a little bit of fun. He definitely was not there to announce his conversion to the Christian faith. But I have said that there's too much is being made out of his comments here as though he is saying something new. Now, this, I want to read to you just a little brief passage from my book, The Grace Effect, which is at fine booksellers everywhere. And I highly recommend that you buy it and read it. Of my books, it's probably the one that got the least attention because it was labeled, unfortunately, an adoption book. It's telling the story of adoption, but it's not an adoption book. I'm telling a much larger story there. But I do want to read to you just a little passage from this. This book was published in 2011. So I wrote this sometime in 2009 or 10. Then again, with the specter of a Muslim Europe looking more possible with every passing year, perhaps they, meaning the new atheists, guys like Richard Dawkins, perhaps they are beginning to recognize that the freedoms they enjoy are due to more than serendipity. In an April 2010 interview with the Times of London, Dawkins said this, "There are no Christians, as far as I know, blowing up buildings. I'm not aware of any Christian suicide bombers. I'm not aware of any major Christian denomination that believes the penalty for apostasy is death. I have mixed feelings about the decline of Christianity, insofar as Christianity might be a bulwark against something worse." So the comments that he made there 14 years ago are very much like the comments that he makes here. He has mixed feelings about the decline of Christianity. He would like to preserve it. And I get why he would like to preserve it, because he has flourished in that culture. As T.S. Eliot observed, only a Christian culture could produce a Voltaire or a Nietzsche. And I would say that only a Christian culture could produce a Richard Dawkins. He has something to push against, something in which he can be the antithesis, something in which he can write, you know, best-selling books like this one, The God Delusion. In fact, without the Christian faith, Richard Dawkins wouldn't exist in any meaningful way. And not just simply as an atheist, but his science wouldn't exist. Science as we know it was the product of a Christian Europe. I believe it's Kepler who said that science is the process of thinking God's thoughts after him. These men were, by and large, even if many of them today are not, they were Christians. And so for Richard Dawkins to come along and to say that he has mixed feelings about the decline of the Christian faith, or that while he doesn't believe any aspect of Christianity, that he is sad to see its decline, to me, that's a bit like saying, I love the warmth of the sun, I just don't like the sun itself. I could do without the sun itself, but I do want the warmth of the sun. I do want the sun's rays. That just doesn't make any sense at all. C.S. Lewis said this, "I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun, S-U-N, has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else." So you see, Richard Dawkins, though he doesn't realize it, he doesn't believe in God, but because of God, he sees everything else. Because in Christianity, we have Western civilization as we know it. You simply cannot kick out the substructure and keep the superstructure. And that is what a lot of the so-called new atheists have wanted to do all along. It was a major part of my conversations, both public and private, with Christopher Hitchens on this very subject. And by the way, I've never said this publicly, but what is funny to me about the controversy that was generated over this particular book, about my conversations with Christopher Hitchens, private conversations with Christopher Hitchens, is this. Those conversations in this book were taken verbatim from this book, which Christopher Hitchens read and commented on in emails. And he didn't dispute but one thing. And you know what that was? He said, "You have me drinking Johnny Walker Red Label. I only drink Johnny Walker Black Label." So for those who wanted to claim that I was saying something, you know, that I was just making it up, it just simply wasn't true, Christopher read it and liked it. He thought it was an accurate representation of his own views. But again, this is the nature of the kind of conversations that I was having with these guys, and that I've had with Richard Dawkins many times. It is my private hope that Richard Dawkins would come to know Jesus Christ. Will he? I doubt it, but you know, God has been known to do some pretty remarkable things. And Who knows? Perhaps late in life, he will have a literal come to Jesus moment. I certainly hope that he does. I hope for his own sake, not for mine, not because the Christian faith needs a Richard Dawkins conversion. It certainly doesn't. But I do for his sake, because I actually do care about the soul of Richard Dawkins. And I can't call us friends, but we have been friendly. And I certainly mean him no harm, even as I combat these kinds of views and these kinds of statements. I just said that you can't kick out the substructure of society and culture, which is what I'm talking about, and keep the superstructure. You can't kick out the legs of the chair and keep whatever is sitting on it. It doesn't work that way. And that's kind of what they want to do. It's, you know, the Christian version, or a kind of, I guess it's not Christian, but a sort of Christian-ish version of Dawkins' remark is this. It's someone who says they want a Savior, not a Lord. They want Jesus as a Savior because they're afraid of hell. But they don't want a Lord. They don't want to submit themselves to his life. And Dawkins, in a sense, is saying something like this, that he wants to bask in the rays of the light that God in heaven gives to humanity in what we call common grace. Common grace is a oft misunderstood and vastly underrated theological Christian theological doctrine. And it is this idea that God sends his rain to fall on the just and the unjust. It doesn't just fall on the crops of the believing farmer, but on the unbelieving farmer. The rays of the sun, they hit not just believers, but unbelievers as well. That's common grace. God's goodness is bestowed upon humanity as a whole. Now when we're talking about a salvation, we're talking about something we might call specific or special grace, which is different. That's someone putting their faith in Jesus Christ. But common grace is the idea that his goodness in some measure is exhibited to everyone. And Richard Dawkins, whether he knows it or not, is basically expressing an appreciation, both in what I read here in his comments in the Times in April of 2010 and in this particular interview, he is expressing appreciation for God's common grace, because he recognizes that the morality in the West has been largely defined by the Christian faith, either directly or as a reaction to it, with books like his, or guys again like Friedrich Nietzsche or Voltaire or many others, Bertrand Russell, on and on we go. Joe Biden with his perverse, what was it called, Trans Visibility Day? That absolutely, even that immorality was in reaction to the Christian faith, which is why he should declare it on Easter. It is meant to be a perversion of the Christian faith. It is meant to be an in-your-face to Christians. Would they do that to Muslims? I don't think so. It was in Britain that you had a woman who was silently standing in front of an abortion clinic. They asked her if she was praying, and they arrested her because of what might be going on in her head. Tell me, British listeners, French listeners, any European listeners, if Muslims had been praying, put out prayer carpets and had been praying in front of an abortion clinic or anywhere in Europe, would the police have come and arrested them? The answer to that is definitely no. And it's because they're afraid of them. They're afraid of them. They'll stop traffic to put out their prayer carpets and pray. But Christianity is the only religion that is politically correct to discriminate against. And yet you have an older version of atheist like Richard Dawkins. These were guys who at least attended some Sunday school, who went to church at least a little bit. He speaks of his appreciation for cathedrals and for Christmas carols and Christian hymns. His generation would know a lot of that. This modern generation doesn't know any of it. And so they don't feel the same level of restraint that he does. Where they have a seething hatred for the Christian faith, him less so, because he has been a product of it. And perhaps later in life, he's coming to recognize that. But I'll quote T.S. Eliot again. If Christianity goes, the whole culture goes. You cannot keep just a bit of it. And that is because once Christianity goes, it's not just simply that we lose the beautiful architecture or beautiful hymns or Christmas carols. It's not just that we lose some of our beautiful art, some of our beautiful literature, which again is rooted in a Christian worldview. Try to make sense of Shakespeare without some understanding of the Bible or Christianity. You can't. You just simply can't. Or for that matter, Dostoevsky or, Tolstoy or Faulkner. You're not going to understand any of it without some understanding of the Christian faith, because it's written within that context and that world view. But we will lose much more. We will revert to barbarism. And that's the direction that we're going with the things that are happening to children in our society, with the annihilation of the unborn. We are becoming a barbarous people. Lord of the Flies author William Golding said this. He said, the problems of human society are the problems of human nature. That's really a profound observation. It's a profoundly Christian observation, because that is the assertion of the Christian faith. The Christian faith doesn't make me good. I don't become a better person than anybody who's listening to this podcast. I become just a little less evil. And that is because I have the restraint of the Holy Spirit. I have the restraint of Jesus Christ upon my life. So again, it isn't that I become a good person. I become a slightly less evil one, and I become a forgiven one. I love what Evelyn Waugh, the celebrated author, said when someone said to him what a horrible person that he was. He said, indeed I am, and imagine how much worse I would be if I were not a Christian. It's very true, ladies and gentlemen. The problems of human society are the problems of human nature. Now, let's think on that for just a moment. Some philosophies, some religions, some worldviews are like gasoline on the fire of our darker impulses. Islam, I would maintain, and I think that this is what Dawkins himself is trying to carefully say, Islam is a fire that has been fed by gasoline. And that is because it is feeding on the darker impulses, particularly male impulses in human nature. You like violence? You can do it for Allah. You like women? 70 virgins. They could be yours. Ha ha. You die a martyr, you go to heaven. Whatever it is, pillaging, theft, if you do it on behalf of Allah, lying, if you do it on behalf of Allah, if it advances Allah's cause, it is okay. And I know there will be some people who will come into the YouTube comments and say that I'm lying and what I'm telling you isn't true. It's 100% true. Go back and look at my interview with Dr. J. Smith. And I'll just tell you this from my own engagement with Muslims, debating them both on major network television, and in private conversations and engagement. in those cultures. This is true. Now, I agree with what Richard says here. This is not true of every Muslim. Many Muslims are afraid to read their own holy literature because they know it's violent. They want to stay away from it. They do not want to live according to it. So they are, as Richard Dawkins here says, that he's kind of a cultural Christian, which means he's basically like a Methodist. Forgive me, Methodist. I used to be a Methodist. But Richard Dawkins could join one of your churches and really not have to change his belief system at all. Or maybe Presbyterian, what is it? What Presbyterian wing is the big lefty wing? It's not the PCUS, it's not the PCA. I think it's the PCUSA. He could join one of those churches and really not have to change much of anything that he believes. But many Muslims are cultural Muslims. They acknowledge that faith to some extent, but they've been westernized in every other meaningful way, and they kind of stay away from their own holy literature because they know what it is. It is that religion is gasoline on the fire of human nature. But I would argue that Dawkins' belief system is as well. Doesn't mean that he obviously has some measure of restraint from his on his own personal life because of his interaction with the Christian faith and because he has inhaled deeply of a Christian culture. But atheism, I mean, he's talking about Christianity's problems with with female vicars or bishops or pastors or ministers or whatever it is. I mean, come on. Atheist secular regimes killed no less than 150 million people in the 20th century alone. That is more than all religious wars from all previous centuries combined. And that is because it is, as I say, like gasoline on the fire of human nature. So we have to ask ourselves the question, if human beings are, as I allege, we have a bent towards evil. This is Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 21. That's where we get the doctrine of original sin from those chapters where Augustine, gave us the phrase original sin. If you believe, as I do, that human beings, they're not born tabula rasa, a blank slate, but we are born, as the Bible says, speaking lies. We are born with a bent towards evil. No one has to be restrained from their good impulses. We all have to be restrained from our evil ones. And that either comes from the inside, the restraint of the Holy Spirit, or it comes from the outside. And in what does that look like? Well, it comes from the fear of the fear of the law, the fear of the police, the fear of the secret police, the fear of government retribution in some sense upon your life. Or it maybe comes in the form of some kind of you're a mom or your pastor or somebody else who has some kind of major influence upon your life that serves to restrain you. But atheist regimes, as far back as the French Revolution, discovered that once the Christian faith was removed, annihilated and removed from culture, they had a massive morality problem. A massive morality problem. And do you know what the absurd architects of the French Revolution did? I mean, if ever there was a misnomer in history, this is it. The so-called Committee for Public Safety, which sent, Robespierre's the most famous member of that group, which sent roughly 20,000 people to the guillotine. And trust me, they'd have killed millions. They just didn't have the means of doing it at the time. They didn't have Zyklon B. They didn't have machine guns. So they had to kill them one at a time. But those were atheists who were doing that. Aggressive atheists who were doing it. And yet they recognized they had a massive problem with public morality. And so they instituted the absurd cult of supreme being. They created a fake god and told people to worship it. And this is what led George Washington in his farewell address in September of 1796, where he said, "Public morality cannot be maintained apart from religion. And he wasn't meaning any religion. He was talking about the Christian faith. Washington himself was a Christian. I've received many messages from the posse that you guys do not get notified when new episodes come out on YouTube, even though you might have been ringing that bell icon. It's no secret that we are covering sensitive topics here on YouTube that these mega corporations don't really agree with. In other words, they have reasons to suppress what we're saying on this platform. You might not know this, but I have a weekly newsletter that will notify you when there are new episodes of Ideas Have Consequences. This is the best way to stay up to date on all that I'm doing. You'll get new episodes, documentaries, articles I'm writing, courses, and other exclusive content straight to your inbox every week. Go to join.larrytaunton.com. That's join.larrytaunton.com. to join the newsletter, or you can simply look for the link in the description below this video. Back to the podcast. So we find ourselves with these kinds of crazy remarks where someone says, you know what? I don't like what I see coming behind Christianity. Something wicked this way comes, as Ray Bradbury said. Something is going to replace the void that is left by Christianity. And you have people like Dawkins who are a little nervous about it because they recognize that it is likely in Britain. I mean, you heard the woman say, the interviewer, that there are no less than 6,000 mosques being built in Europe right now, with many more planned. With many more planned, being funded primarily by the Saudis, I think. We've just finished March Madness in basketball. You got the brackets that work their way down until we end up with the so-called Final Four and then the two that are fighting it out. Is it possible that we've had kind of an ideological March Madness? All these different ideologies that are battling it out and they're fighting down until we get down to the Final Four and then the Final Two. And right now, the way it's starting to look is the Final Two are going to be aggressive, utopian, atheistic, hateful, anti-human, globalist, secularism. Is in one bracket, and coming out of the other bracket is militant Islam, fighting for supremacy, not just in Europe, but of the world. Is that where we're headed? And a guy like Richard Dawkins is becoming a little unsettled by the demise of Christianity in Britain, which he has worked aggressively to bring about. I mean, let me read to you the opening line, if memory serves, of his book, The God Delusion, which is a screed from beginning to end. This isn't science. Here it is. Again, from The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, page 31, first sentence. The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully. The guy who wrote that is saying, I have mixed feelings about the demise of Christianity. And that is because what's coming behind it is what he just described, but not in the form of the Christian faith. This is not the Christian faith. This is not the God that I know. This is not the God who has been active in my life, in my lowest moments, in my highest moments. This is not the God who forgave me of my sin and my rebellion. This is not the God before whom I will one day stand. What he's just described there is Allah. What he's just described there is the malevolent atheistic secular utopias. What he's just described there is the atheistic, malevolent atheistic secular utopianism that looms over the Western world. That's what he's described there. Without the Christian faith, ladies and gentlemen, in one form or another, we revert to a kind of barbarism. I just saw this video recently. It's also from British television, and I thought it was quite fascinating, given the assertion that this woman is making. She is claiming that she has effectively changed the nature of her dog, and she has made her dog a vegetarian. She's taken her dog and made her dog a vegetarian. And so confident was she in the success of her experiment that she came on television. I don't know what British TV show this is, but she came on television and this is what happened.
One is full of vegetables and one is full of meat.
Storm,
we hate to put the temptation in front of you, but it's over you. Right? Let her go. Let her go.
Oh, she's obviously going to go. Obviously. Oh, you little...
Yes.
I didn't swear.
Oh, and there is natural selection.
Oh, she's checking it out. Well, in fairness, the weather has cooled down quite dramatically.
Yes, of course it has. Yes. But look, this is a dog acting naturally.
My German Shepherd Ranger is upstairs, and I'm going to tell you this. I would have no hope of changing his nature when it comes to such things. If I put out for him a bowl of broccoli and beef or chicken or pork or turkey, I promise you 100 out of 100 times, he is not going to eat the broccoli. It is his nature. And why I think that's interesting is because, as I said, without the Christian faith, we revert to barbarism. We revert to form. We default to our evil, our sinful human nature. It was Christianity that brought civilization to Western Europe, barbaric Western Europe. It is in the Christian faith that we find a fundamental principle of our law, innocent until proven guilty. Read Hammurabi's Code. It doesn't have those kinds of assumptions in it. Atheists like Dawkins want to keep the product of Christianity while getting rid of Christ. Doesn't work that way. And that is because it is a product of Christian people, of Christians who are themselves transformed. And when I speak of the grace effect, the term I coined for this particular book, what I mean is this: as you and I experience grace inwardly, we exhibit it outwardly. As we are transformed inwardly by God's grace, we exhibit it outwardly. You begin to show it. You begin to exhibit it. Without it, we revert to form. We revert to barbarism. And that is because our nature remains like that dog, utterly unchanged. There's no restraint upon our lives. Nothing to hold us back from indulging our darker impulses, save one thing. And it's something that the Bible speaks of in Romans 2:15, and that is conscience. God has written his law upon the consciences of men. And that does upon the hearts of men. And the conscience is the soul's voice. But that can be seared, the Apostle Paul tells us, as with a hot iron. And when that happens, Darfurs happen, Auschwitzes happen, the Holocaust of abortion happens, bumping off the elderly in Canada is what happens. And that's where we're going. As Christianity has been leaking from the culture like a slow leak in a tire, so goes our morality, so goes, as T.S. Eliot says, absolutely everything else. Will soon regret its loss. Among the many things for which Christopher Hitchens was known was something, atheist Christopher Hitchens, was something called the Hitchens Challenge. And it went something like this. Name for me an ethical statement made or an action performed by a Christian that could not also be performed by an atheist. Now, on the surface of it, this seemed to be a kind of philosophical Gordian knot. He maintained that he put this question to people all over the world and no one had been able to solve the riddle of the Hitchens Challenge. But I say to you that the Hitchens Challenge is nonsense. And that is because while on the surface of it, it seems to have merit, in reality, it doesn't, because it's like saying that name for me something that a carnivore could eat that a herbivore couldn't also eat. But that overlooks nature. That overlooks nature. Because you see, while herbivores can eat meat, they don't, because it's not in their nature. And so it is with unbelievers. As a general rule, there are exceptions to this, but as a general rule, they aren't great builders of hospitals. They aren't great supporters of the poor. They are not individuals who are known for their great concern for humanity. Quite the opposite. I mean, the whole premise of Friedrich Nietzsche's philosophy, which was atheistic to its core, was to say that this is a sign of cultural weakness. Christianity keeps those kinds of people alive. We need to move on from that. We need to be strong enough to look reality in the eye and say, we need to get rid of the weaker elements of our species. Adolf Hitler was listening to that. And he's, you got a point. And he decided to put legs to Nietzsche's philosophy. Ladies and gentlemen, without the Christian faith, the whole culture as we know it goes. And this idea that somehow you can preserve some minor part of it, or even major parts of it, without preserving the author of it, just makes not a bit of sense. You can't have the laws without the lawgiver. This has been Ideas Have Consequences with me, Larry Alex Taunton.